Now entering the Royal Rumble, Bushwhacker Butch, the Honky Tonk Man, Bad News Brown, and Marty Jannetty.
I feel like this is the first one we're doing where we don't have like a credible entry.
Look, some people may disagree. You know, some people with pig-like tendencies. But the drop-off from Shawn Michaels to this group is quite precipitous when you think of our last two episodes. Yeah, and actually, you know, it's kind of sad, Aaron, that we weren't doing the Red Rooster tonight because I have a rooster-related story for you.
Oh, do you want to tell me it?
Would have been timely.
Or do you want to wait?
No, it's pretty simple. It's just, it was just funny because specifically today. So my kids really like the song Rooster by Alice in Chains.
Okay. What a strange song for your children to like.
Well, I listen to Lithium a lot on Sirius XM, and like I'm not one of those people that kowtows to children's musical tastes. Mm-hmm. I play what I want a lot of the time.
Yep.
So they know a lot of yacht rock, they know a lot of alternative rock, and they know a lot of Biggie Smalls. But they really like that song, and they sing it a lot. And it made because this is funny that they're talking about a rooster, right? Like, here comes the rooster. So Alex has been singing it like all day on and off.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was Melatonin Sunday because they had some late nights the last few nights. So I was reading comics in my bed to them both, and they both passed out. And I pick them up, and like, you know, when they kind of mumble when they're like asleep and they talk a little bit sometimes, yep. But they're out of it. So I pick them up and I'm walking with them. And he starts singing fucking Rooster. Like, just of all things. Like, I don't know if he's dreaming about it or what, but he's like, here comes the Rooster. I was like, all right, buddy. Like, you're fucking done tonight. But anyway, it just happened before we got on the phone, so it was fresh in my mind. And I was like, damn, it would have been funny if the Red Rooster was tonight.
He only has one entrance, right? So
yeah, next. Yeah, he's coming up soon.
All right, great.
You have to use that as the theme for that episode.
All right. Did you know I have... at minimum, 3 roosters at my house right now.
I've seen your wife chronicling that tale, yes.
Yes, but we've decided we're going to try and sneakily keep... because we're not allowed to keep roosters in our neighborhood because, you know, they start screaming and shit, right?
Yeah.
But we've decided we're going to try and keep one. We're going to get a collar. They sell rooster, like, collars to
me. Oh, a collar. Okay, shut him up.
But he's so cool. We named him Gaston.
Why didn't you name him Terry? It was right there.
No, because, we're in a constant war with the chickens because my wife, Nikki, wanted to name them all after Broadway divas.
Mm.
And I don't know. Like, and even when we thought some of them were boys, we weren't going to name them. So I'm just leaving the naming for her.
I think you can go with Terry or Taylor.
Yeah, but he's Gaston, like based on the hero from Beauty and the Beast.
No, I know who it is. Yep, I'm aware.
You know, he's got that song in the bar.
I'm Gaston, I'm drinking my beer.
That's not the song. I thought you knew who it was.
That's the version I've seen. I do know who Gaston is.
Good, good. All right, well, we are talking some, like you said, soon. We're talking a big fall off here.
My daughter also asked if anyone in the band was named Alice.
Oh. Yeah. My 6-year-old son in Costco about a week and a half ago said very loudly, why don't we like people with black faces? And we were shocked. Like, what is he talking about?
Where's that coming from? Yes.
And it turned out he was talking about TIE fighter pilots from Star Wars. But you got to word that differently, buddy.
Like, yeah, that's a tough one in public.
Yeah. And luckily, like, we live in a French area. So, like, mm-hmm. You know, I don't think anybody picked up on it.
They're like, but, oh, yes.
Well, they probably, the French here might have agreed, but... but yeah, it was very shocking. Like, it was the most shocking thing he's ever said, and he said a lot of shit, so.
Well, there you go. It's a wild world out there, full of roosters named Gaston and racist children.
My racist child. All right. Now entering the Royal Rumble!
Bushwhacker Butch!
So, I really struggle with this 1989 performance from him.
Is it funny to you that we're not doing Butch and Luke in the same show?
I know.
Because so many tag teams, like, they'll do a lot of single stuff, but they never really did.
No.
Like, it wouldn't be weird to do, you know, we're doing the Heart Foundation separate, you know, what we have. You know, we did Demolition together. It's like, I feel like some teams are okay to do a part, like Sean and Marty, obviously, but it's kind of weird to do the Bushwhackers separate.
Yeah. And it feels weird that I feel like Butch has, like, a much more prolific Royal Rumble career than Luke.
Yes. Yep.
He gets a massive pop on his entrance, though.
Yeah, in a bunch of time.
yeah.
But it also, his pop kind of coincided with Jake coming back with the snake.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of the pop was Butch and how much was Jake behind him. But he immediately fades out, like, when Jake comes out with that snake. But he does have a fun little stiff battle with the Hammer. Of course, we talked a lot about Hammer in 89. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But a lot of the same usual Bushwhacker stuff. He's punching, he's kicking,
clapping,
whacking around, selling, clapping. Yes, just kind of moves around. Ties up with the Honky Tonk Man for a bit. He bites him. then kind of a cool little battle with Tito, which was neat.
Yeah.
89 has some of these cool little face battles throughout this one, and that's one of them. And then they work together, and they eliminate the Honky Tonk Man. So that's a big moment.
It's insane to me that of all, you know, there's people that we've dealt with that like haven't eliminated anybody, but why on earth does Butch get to eliminate somebody?
And Honky Tonk, who hadn't really dropped yet, like, it was coming, but
yeah,
he had just lost a title like less than 6 months earlier, so his like full drop really comes later in 89.
Yeah,
so he's still kind of a name that him and Tito work together to do.
Yeah, and then once he tosses Honky, he does that arm.
Oh, it's so good. Such a good brag.
Yeah.
Like, the crowd's all, he plays it up big time. Like, he's surprised he gets to do that.
I love, too, that, like, I mean, he's just one of the many guys who jumps on Honky Tonk Man since everybody hates him.
Mm-hmm.
He takes about a dozen Hammer elbow drops, and by the end of them, just, like, Butch, that is, and by the end of them, just stops moving.
Yeah, I mean, he ever really beat the shit out of him throughout all this. And then Butch works with Bad News a bit, too.
Yeah.
And he always takes a lot of time to play to the crowd, which I thought was good in a Rumble, because you don't get that a lot. But he really took his time in between offense to play it up. Interesting bit. I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago with Sean, where, like, him and Sean are in the corner, and they're really going at it, like, scrapping and punching. Like, it felt like one of them pissed the other one off, and it was really – they were really going at it there.
Yeah.
He definitely looked gassed. Like, this felt a little long for him to be going.
Well, he's marching around. It's not only that he's fighting. In between the fighting, he's just marching the whole time. He marches.
Yeah, he's nonstop energy in there.
Yeah, he just So is his character that he can't walk like that? He can't walk normally? Because he
just likes marching.
Well, he marches across the ring just to hit someone once. And he's constantly making these ridiculous facial expressions. At one point, there's nothing to do. He just marches around in a circle.
I mean, as we go, he definitely looks drunk. Like, by the end, he's, like, stumbling around like he's drunk. And then he finally succumbs to Bad News Brown, just as Luke comes in, which is bad timing.
Yeah.
Luke arrives literally as he's getting thrown out.
Yeah.
I actually thought this was fine. I don't know. Like, he was kind of a fun addition. He had a lot of energy during that stretch. I liked him playing to the crowd. He was always involved. You always kind of noticed him. He wasn't super strong or anything, but... and he didn't get talked about barely at all. But yeah. I thought he was a net positive in this appearance. Like, you wouldn't have thought that going in, but it was like, you know what? He actually added a lot. And I picked up on it a little bit doing other guys in 89 earlier, so I kind of knew it was coming. But then watching him, devoted was definitely – I was like, wow, this guy worked.
It took the team, the massive team of Hulk Hogan and Bad News Brown to get him out of the ring. I've never seen them team up on anything except maybe a prostitute, right? So, like, it took a lot to get him out of that ring. Does it bother you at all that he had more time in this match than the WWF champion Randy Savage?
Well, that's because that no-good Hulk Hogan also took him out.
Fucking Hogan. He's the worst. What a piece of shit. Where are you at with Butch 1989? And so, for those of you for the first time, we score three categories out of 10 each: presentation, work rate / creativity, and effectiveness. We score that out of 10, then do a cumulative score out of 60, which gives us our individual ranking. So, where do you have Butch from 1989 in presentation?
A one. Because they don't even ever talk about him. Like, he's not highlighted at all. I wouldn't say he's presented strongly. He's just entertaining. So from a presentation standpoint, there's not much there.
He's present. I'm at a one also. Where are your work rate?
I actually gave him a four because I liked all the playing to the crowd. And, like, it's different. Like, you don't see that a lot in these Rumbles. And he was constantly engaged. Like, he was moving around. We talked about it, right?
Yeah.
He's always, like, constant motion. He's scrapping. You get that cool bit with Sean, whether it's real or not, where they're, like, legit shoot fighting in the corner. He mixed it up with a lot of guys. I liked the stuff with Hammer where he's getting the shit kicked out of him. I just thought he did a lot of different stuff. And, like, he was just... like constant energy in the ring. So I reward that in Rumbles because it's easy to lull and just kind of lay around or stand in the corner, but he's like constantly moving in there.
Yeah, I went at two. I didn't hate, I liked it. It was fine. I think the most memorable spot for me was when Mr. Perfect kind of threw him down and then slapped him on the front of the forehead. I don't know why he did that, but it must've been a rib or something. So I'm at a two, and I'm also at a two on effectiveness. I mean, even though he's in there for 18 minutes, not a hell of a lot done, but he did get to eliminate the Honky Tonk Man, so I'm giving him some credit for that.
Yeah, I gave him a three. He lasted a while. He was involved in a lot of stuff. I thought he effectively helped get other guys over through the offense and the selling. And I think he was effective in getting the crowd riled up, too. Like, the crowd reacted to every time he did the whoa, yay, and grabbed the ropes. Like, that's a part of these, too, that he kept the crowd into it.
He did keep the crowd into it. That is very, very, very true. So that gives him a total of 12 points.
Not bad.
Yeah, really not bad. Now, that's going to tie him with Greg Valentine from 89, Jim Duggan from 91, and that's – oh, no, excuse me. And on top is Jim Neidhart from 88.
Yeah, I put him at the bottom because I wouldn't have him above Hammer, I don't think, in 89.
No, I don't think so either. Would you put him ahead of Duggan at 91?
Was Hammer below Duggan?
No, it's I read the order wrong. It's Neidhart 1, Valentine 2.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I got it. Duggan in 91 was kind of bland, right?
Yeah, it was nothing. He's only in there 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think I'd put him above Duggan.
All right.
I think it's impressive that he went 18 minutes and was like, you would not have expected him to be the ball of energy he was in there.
I love that, like, I think you think it's impressive that he went 18 minutes. I think it's preposterous, but... all the same, like...
Well, I think it's preposterous from a booking standpoint, but impressive from him as a physical, you know, physical standpoint, that he actually lasted 18 minutes and didn't, like, blow up or be lazy. Like, he was always on the go.
How old was he here? I always thought these guys were so fucking old, even as a kid. He's got the worst bald spot of any wrestler not named Hulk Hogan.
I don't think he's that old here.
What, you think he's, like, 50 here?
Let's find out. I mean, Luke still wrestles, right?
Now?
He still does stuff, yeah.
How?
Butch is in shape.
Didn't they come out for the Hall of Fame and they could barely walk?
Butch is in bad, worse shape now. Luke still does stuff. He's pretty active in the business. Butch is 76 now, so what would it make him then?
So 30.
He was born in 1944.
Okay, so he was 45 years old now.
Yeah. So that's pretty crazy. They're into 96, so they were in their mid-50s. When that's, like, old for that time period, you know?
Yeah, but they also wrestled the style. Like, I mean, there's no way these guys are getting hurt. They're grabbing dicks, and, you know, like, right. It's not like...
I don't think I wouldn't have thought he was that old. I would have said he was, like, late 30s here, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I love, too, that he's just as scared of the snake as Andre, but he's not... He doesn't throw himself out.
Right. Just kind of hangs on.
He's the smarter one between him and Andre the Giant.
He rides it out.
Yeah, likes to march. He's hated by all. Do you think he gained anything from being in this match?
My respect.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. You didn't respect him before?
I was ambivalent. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think they – I don't know. He probably didn't gain much, obviously. That's fine. But, yeah, I just think it was a good performance of a guy you wouldn't expect to have one. And I like that's – if we're looking for shit in this show, right, that's one of it.
Right.
It's like these kind of hidden performances you wouldn't have expected to see.
Fair enough. So in 91, he comes out number 8. And he is marching so hard to the ring that I can't believe he didn't put his shoulders out. Like, he is just flailing those arms up as hard as possible.
He's looking to tear an ACL.
With the knees also? Comes right in.
Yeah, I mean, he's stomping down hard, you know.
He's stomping. Like, remember when Sami Zayn put out his shoulder, like throwing his arms in the air? That's the vibe I get from this march.
But another big pop for him, though.
Oh, huge. These guys are over. That whole argument of, like, they don't belong in the Hall of Fame is so freaking preposterous. I forget who was having that argument about how they don't have a spot because they didn't do the X, Y, and Z. But these guys were such an over part of this era.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They were kids. Like, the whole show was for kids, but they were really the kids' act.
Right.
And Piper, instead of anybody saying anything, Piper's just doing his, ha ha, he's just so happy to see it. He comes in the ring, he marches in a circle until old foe from 1989, Greg Valentine, steps in and has enough.
Just cracks him. Yeah, it's funny that he just, like, marches around the ring and just, like, weaves in and out, not touching anyone.
Yeah. And he's also just, he's marching again so violent. Like, I can't stress it enough over audio how violently he's marching. But then there's another section where Valentine's trying to eliminate Paul Roma and he won't let him do that. Gets a double noggin knocker on Valentine. There's a moment where did you catch the moment where he grabs Paul Roma by the anus?
No, I didn't. And I'm usually sensitive to those since I know very well when he grabbed the poor Rougeau's penis.
Yeah, well, on this one, he might have inserted, like, his, like, if he made his finger into, like, a duck face and put it in, I would not be surprised. Because he was right in there. And Piper is just, look at this guy going on. Just super happy to see
Gotta love him.
Butch.
But he kind of did his usual bar brawling, riling up the crowd.
Yeah.
Goes to the eyes. I thought it was cool seeing him mix it up with some of those guys. He gets into a Brett. Takes a beating from Power and Glory when Hercules comes out. And then again, I enjoyed him and Brett going at it. And then he gets tangled with Herc for a bit. And then he's one of the Undertaker victims when Taker arrives. But again, this was fun. He didn't really accomplish anything. But, once again, he got the crowd engaged and worked up. And he was involved in everything. And what I picked up from the second one was that, okay, maybe he's actually good in these matches because he has such a normal brawling, an engaging brawling style that for matches sometimes can be, some dissonance there. But for this, it's like, it's actually a perfect fit. Like, he just walks around in circles and just throws strikes at people and yells to the crowd. Like, that's kind of what you want in these matches.
Whoa! So it's a lot of that.
Yeah, it's like.
He also rekindles his team from 89 with Tito Santana. Works together with him for a bit, try to get Hercules out. Like,
yes.
I see it. Like, I don't think he's horrible in these matches at all. He's not bad at all, but I think just because he's booked so as nothing, we completely forget about him, right?
Yeah, so I went for one on presentation again. That was about the same.
Yeah.
Besides Piper getting all horny for him. There's not much else going on.
I am also at a one on presentation.
I actually went 3 on work rate. I think it was a notch below the last one, but again, like, I just give a lot of credit to the energy that he brings to the ring. His constant movement, constant engagement. The yelling to the crowd, it's just, felt a little bit behind the 89, but still, like, he kind of worked exactly the same. So, to me, that's the same, just about the same.
Yeah, I'm at a 1. I think it's a little less effective than the 89. But I think he was also in there 10 minutes, and he's one of those guys that, unlike 89, I feel you could have just taken him right out of this and it would have been fine.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
And it's maybe because the ring is just so full of guys.
Right.
That his stuff wasn't as effective, right? I'm also at a 1 for effectiveness. I mean, he didn't do anything.
I gave it 2, just as, again, I gave him the points of the rile in the crowd up and the big pop and all that. Like, it's an effective member. So I don't think you could net replace him with nobody, like, with a bum. You know what I mean? Like, because not anyone's going to get the pop he got.
Right. That's true.
And the constant crowd engagement. So, like, I don't think you could just replace him with, not to pile on the guy, the Red Rooster. So, you needed someone at least at his level of overness, which isn't everybody, so.
Yeah, I mean, say what you will about the Bushwhackers, they were always over.
Yeah, like, if Hillbilly Jim was in that spot, like, I don't think he's getting that pop, you know what I mean?
No, probably not. Or the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
Possibly the worst ever. All right, so that gives him 9 points, and that puts him on par with Jim Neidhart from 1990, Jim Brunzel from 1988, Dino Bravo from 1988, and Ron Bass from 1988.
So Bass was the best of that bunch?
No, I went top to bottom that time.
He mixed it up that time, okay.
And I'm going to go top to bottom from here on out. So Neidhart 90, Brunzel 88.
Bass 88, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's better than, I don't know. Do you think he's better than Bass 88, or would you put him at the bottom?
So Bass has that weird maybe he should be at the bottom, because at least Bass has that weird elimination of Sam Houston.
Yeah. But Bass wasn't nearly as over or energetic in that ring.
No, and I also gave Bass a 0 for work rate.
So. Yeah, I'd put Butch above Bass.
Above Dino Bravo?
No, Bravo had a good 88.
Oh, and he was Final Four.
Yeah.
Final Four.
Yes, above Bass, below Dino.
All right, so that slots him in as the 57th best.
All right, not bad.
No, not bad at all. Far from the worst, far from the best, which I think really sums up the Bushwhackers in general. Mm. And just so we're clear, his other performance in 89 was 45th.
Okay.
Now, his next one we're going to talk about, I don't think is probably going to go as high.
1995. You know, it's funny because his partner has a, equally as bad showing as well. And he almost equals his partner's infamous one from a few years earlier, but nothing. I mean, he literally comes in, gets a few strikes, and gets thrown right out. Like, just honestly, if he never showed up, no one would have ever noticed. Like, there was no reason to fly this guy in for this. No. 19 seconds, Shawn Michaels throws him out. He came in at 18. Just a complete waste of a body. So I gave 0s across the board.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a reason to fly him in. There was nobody else to fill this card. That's the reason to fly him in.
Oh, another guy under a mask is Mr. Fucking X or whatever. Would have been just as because he doesn't even get the pop. Like, there aren't costumes by this point.
Zero reaction. And the commentator, I think it's Vince, just goes, "It's Butch."
And they, I mean, they were around for like another year or so, I think, too, which is crazy. But
it's insane they hung on. I love that Lawler predicts the short stay by going like, "All right, get the stopwatch out." Right away. And if you notice his elimination, too, it's so messy. Like, he punches Michaels a bunch, and then Michaels clearly tells him it's time for him to go. Rakes his eyes and tosses him.
Yeah, it's it's a waste.
Yeah,
it's so, one of the worst we've seen for sure.
I'm at 0 also. Now we got a decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
So 0 is, sadly, there's a tie at 0. The top one is Repo Man 1993 and Nikolai Volkov 1992. Now, I don't want to touch Volkov 92.
No, that's going to be our gold standard for the worst.
The bobbing and weaving, the smiling, happy face, like, no thanks. Repo Man was also in for 3 minutes and did nothing. So do we want to put Butch on top?
Well, that's our old standard that we go by in all our shows.
Yep.
Shorter the better. Yes, I think if you're in there for 3 minutes and worthless, it's definitely worse than 12 seconds and worthless, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like we talked about with Valentine, like 40 minutes of nothing, 20 minutes of nothing in 1994 is like worse. You know, you could argue that was worse than this Butch appearance in some ways.
Yeah, so that slots Butch in as the 80th. Best, third worst ever Royal Rumble performance of all time. Now, sadly, at the end of the show, we're not going to talk about Butch in our top 10 because he fails to make it. But let's just go over his stats quickly. 3 Royal Rumbles, a total time of 28 minutes, 39 seconds.
That's way higher than you would think.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's higher than someone else we're going to talk about later tonight that has 4 appearances. He's right behind another guy we're going to talk about. So yeah, it's way more than you'd think. Only one elimination, and he's usually in there on his average time in the ring is 14 minutes. Too much.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And that's with a 19 second appearance in there, so it tells you what the other two were.
Yeah, right? It's like an Iron Man. The Iron Man. And I can't wait till we do Luke and we see that what his overall average is and stuff like that, because I feel like it's going to be quite a bit less.
Oh, yeah, by far.
And why they hated Luke. And yet he has the longevity.
He does. Well, that's why. Less miles on the wheels.
In the Rumble. He didn't take those 80 elbow drops from Greg Valentine. knocked his head silly. Ugh, I always thought they were so gross with the sardines. Like, why would... Imagine part of your gimmick being sardines.
And licking children, yes.
Yes, and licking children. All right, I think we've extended the Butch talk as long as possible.
Yeah, I don't think we even needed to, but we did.
Are Butch and Luke still around in...
Okay, let's get to...
Well, hold on.
In what?
Are Butch and Luke still around in 1992? They are, right?
Yeah.
Because we're going to start hearing a lot about them on New Gen on a Mission, right?
Yeah, probably toward the back end of night three, they pop up a little bit more.
Yeah, Justin Pratt and Tim Slomka taking it from Survivor Series 92 to Survivor Series 1997.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sean and Brett to Sean and Brett. They're probably, especially if they're dealing with superstars, which they do, which, you know, is yeoman's work. I feel like they're in for a lot of Bushwhacker matches.
They'll probably come and go. That seems like a Bushwhacker thing. I mean, like I said, they're little 96, so I think they used to come and go in spurts, though. You wouldn't see them for a bit, then they'd pop back up. But, yeah, I would guess they're still fairly consistent enough in 93.
Right, that we're gonna torture Justin and Tim with that, and we're going to enjoy their torture by listening to their show.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it a chance every other Wednesday on the North-South Connection Podcast Network. When is Rank and File now? I'm very confused.
It's every fourth Friday.
It's still on Fridays. Okay, Jordan, yeah. Duncan, list-based show. They are talking. Are they still on the television theme shows?
They are, yes. Yep. Still, yeah. Working for the theme songs, yes.
Working through that. That's once a month on Fridays on North-South. But every week on North-South, we get Remzo Martinez and Mark Clare breaking down for Second Print Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Are you like the comics, JT?
Yeah, I do. You know, I've been reading a little bit more. It's a lot of usually my bedtime reading with my kids, or at least my son more so. Yes, so there you go.
Yeah, and their latest episode that hit as of this recording is Kingdom Come, which is DC's classic event, which is actually the I'm actually very looking forward to listening to it, because it's the comic that got me back into comics as an adult.
Oh, okay.
And I know Mark and Ramsey are going to do it justice, as they do each and every Sunday on the North-South Connection Podcast Network.
Justice League.
Now entering the Royal Rumble!
I got a long sideburns and my hair slicked back. I'm coming to your town.
The Honky Tonk Man.
Do you have a favorite number? Do you have a favorite number?
Seven.
Is it because it's your birthday day?
Yeah. It's just always kind of been like my lucky number kind of deal.
Mm. See, mine's 11 because it's my birthday day. And here is Honky Tonk Man coming in at 11 and
so
1989.
So feels unlucky now.
Yeah. I guess I should probably think of something else.
Booze as always. He comes out with a stupid smirk.
But huge.
And he
huge
goes right
booze
at our old friend, right at our old friend Butch.
Yeah.
He works with Ron Bass. He gets a little scrap of Mr. Perfect, which is kind of a rare battle.
Mm-hmm.
Fun spot where Perfect goes crazy trying to throw him out, and he just holds on for dear life. We talked a lot about Perfect in 89, of
yeah.
course. It was awesome. Honky always finds himself back to Butch in this match, it feels like. He pinballs around, and finally Butch and Tito throw him out like we talked about. This was all right. He didn't really accomplish anything, but his selling and his bouncing was pretty good. He kind of pinballed around.
Yeah, I love Jesse trying to play off the crowd noise like love.
Yeah.
Listen to how much they love him. And then later it's like, oh, they're so sad to see him go. Like, that's the genius of Jesse, right? Like, that he's able to do that shit. I love, too, that we get Honky and Valentine teaming up on Michaels, which I guess is a prelude of Rhythm and Blues.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get a very strange, like, you're talking about him fighting Perfect and how crazy the crowd was going. But he also goes toe-to-toe with Ron Bass, of all people.
Yeah, again, 89 is kind of a sneaky rumble for cool matchups. Like,
yeah.
I feel like they really tried to overcorrect for 88, where
yeah.
they were so obsessed with the face heel, or at least Jesse was, with the face heel divide. It feels like 89 they go way over the other way, where they really try and get the concept over of every man for himself.
Yeah, and I think it's also through Honky's punches that you also get to see that potentially Butch is drunk, because he punches him so many times and Butch just kind of stands there and weaves.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, like, look, no matter what you think of his run, like, there's no focus. Like, there's no focus on him by the people talking, aside from that first part, right?
No.
But the
no.
heat is still off the charts for this guy.
Yeah.
Like, they still loathe him. I feel like the company just hates him, but they loathe him. Like, the people. Everybody loathes this man.
Well, like I said, it was still fairly fresh for him.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't that long ago that he was having that reign, you know?
Yeah, and it's a true – I never thought that he had go away heat or anything. I actually thought he was a really great act.
Yeah. Like I just think maybe he's around a little too long.
Are you talking about for the Intercontinental run or in general?
No, no. In like 90, whatever the fuck.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's not really doing anything in the.
No, it's just the rhythm and blues stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they do kind of push them. Like, they're like the Hart Foundation's top challengers in the late 90s, so.
Right. And that was not necessary at all. But
nope.
A solid 4 minutes for Honky in here. Where are you at on presentation?
Again, just a one. There's not much to it. Like, yeah, he gets booed and all that, but they barely talk about him. He's not presented as any kind of threat at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm at a one. And I'm also at a one on work rate because I don't think he does anything except his punches.
Yeah, I gave him a two. I think, again, more for the some of the crowd interaction and the playing it up and stuff and you know, mixed in throughout it.
Yeah, I'm at a one, and I'm at a one for effectiveness, but only from the perspective of, like, you know, he's in there a short time, but every single one of his near eliminations popped the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, I gave him a zero.
That gives him a total score of 6, which ties him with Ronnie Garvin from 1989, Jim Duggan from 2009, Jim Duggan from 2012, and Ron Bass from 1989.
I think I put him below Garvin because I remember liking Garvin like a decent amount. I don't know. Would you put him above the Duggins?
The nostalgia runs of Duggan?
Yeah.
No, I think he's effective. I do think he's effective. So maybe ahead of those, below Garvin. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Like, I mean, I love the Duggan bits, but, like, again, you need people like Honky Tonk Man in this thing, for people to care.
Yeah.
So that slots Honky in the 68th overall Royal Rumble performance. tell me where he comes in 1990, because in 1990 he's in a very different place, right? Like, what's going on in his career at this point?
I mean, 90, you could argue this is the low point, even though he's around another year, mm-hmm. because it's right after this is when he does, like, formally start Rhythm and Blues.
Right.
And they're definitely presented better than he was in late 89 and early 90. So I think he's, like, you know, he had that, when's that Saturday Night's Main Event with Hogan? That's, like, in the summer of 89.
Yeah.
That's kind of like his last gasp as a single.
Right. He's just getting killed by Hogan.
Yeah. And then after that, it's nothing. And then, again, he gets the bump with the tag team. But this is probably, like, the bottom of his powers as a singles guy. So he gets the usual heat when he comes out into the ring, and he's late. He's in the, you know, early 20s now.
24, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a nice late draw for him. He, you know, but again, he's fading from relevance for sure. He goes right at Warrior. He gets choked and thrown like a bag of trash by him. he gets worked over by Snuka. Tony says he's the freshest, but that doesn't really help because as we see, he's just getting the shit kicked out of him. And then he goes at Hogan as he comes in. He starts choking him with Hogan's shirt. And then Hogan just grabs him and throws him out. I mean, nothing here at all. Like, a useless punching bag. I mean, added nothing to the match. No. The crowd didn't care as much, you know, in the past. Maybe when he came out, that was it. But it was like a bad jobber-level showing. The only thing that was cool was when he choked Hogan with the shirt. That was about it.
When the Hogan choked him with the shirt.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Is Honky Tonk Man strong enough that Hogan needs to be choking him with a shirt?
No, I know. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, like, immediately a non-factor. Like, as soon as he's in, non-factor. Yeah. 4 minutes and 1 second. What I noticed watching this is when he comes into the ring, everyone is jacked to the gills in the ring except uh-huh. him.
Yes. Like, you could probably argue he's the smartest.
Yeah, right? Well, have you seen him lately?
Yeah, he's jacked to the gills in other ways.
But he looks
He's got the he's got the Kenny Rogers beard and all that now.
Yeah, yeah.
Got the gambler going on.
Yeah, he's such a weird character. Like you want to say bitter guy, but then all of a sudden he comes out with something nice. So, are you zeros across the board? No, you're not.
I gave him a one for creativity for the getting choked by the shirt.
Yeah.
And he gets a little bit of the heat. And he always bumps well. You know, he sells and bumps well. So. I always give him a little love for that, but that's it. He gets a one for me.
And his bumping's comical, too. Like, the way he shakes when he bumps.
Warrior literally threw him like a bag of trash. Like, that wasn't like a hyperbole. That's literally how he threw him to the bat.
No, he was trash.
Yes.
Well, look, I gave him a one just on that exact – for that exact reason. That gives him two, which ties him with Dino Bravo from 1991, Dino Bravo from 1990, and the Junkyard Dog from 1988.
So we hate all those, so I put him above all of them.
Yeah, I suppose. Look, definitely ahead of Dog, but I'm happy to put him ahead of D.
I mean, Bravo 91 at least has the Hammer stuff, I guess, which kind of furthers the Jimmy Hart split. So I don't know. You could maybe argue that one, but
no, I'm putting him
ahead. I'm fine with Dino.
Yeah, it's okay. So that lands Honk Tonk Man 1990 at the 78th best. And then comes this appearance. You and I both, I think it's fair to say that when something's a bit longer than it should be, we tend not to enjoy it as much.
Yeah. Yep.
So he shows up in 1998. He's a surprise, right?
Oh yeah, not revealed at all. But he hadn't been gone long. Like, he was around all of 97 with Rockabilly and all that stuff. And it wasn't until like October when the Outlaws got together that he got punted.
Right.
So I mean, he might have even still been on like Cindy stuff, you know what I mean, at that point afterward. So I get it, he wasn't an announced entrant, but it wasn't like a true like mystery like it would be.
No.
His next one, like, he was still kind of around, you know.
He's replacing Triple H, right? Triple H is hurt, so he's...
Yeah.
And he's wearing what I think are Jerry Lawler's tights with his shit painted on it.
You think so?
Well, I don't know, because I've never seen him in this getup before here.
Might have just been his indie getup.
Maybe. It comes in at number 19 in 1998. He's also one of the few guys in the ring wearing any color other than black.
Yes. He also gets one of the biggest pops like he's had in Rumble matches. Like, he's all smiles, and the crowd really actually enjoyed seeing him here.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ross lies, first of all. He says it's only Honk Tonk Man's second appearance in the match. But then as the match goes on, King goes, JR, you have to take your cowboy hat off to the Honk Tonk Man. And JR just no-sells it like Lawler's Art Donovan.
Well, and then Honky, you kind of get through D'Lo Brown, which is kind of such a random fucking match.
All of it.
And they're just like in the background as Hunter and Owen have their little play come out. And then Honky's in there with Goldust in the corner, and King yells my cousin in a funny bit, which is really funny. Just out of nowhere. A lot of laying around for Honky. Phineas kind of goes at him a bit.
If you saw Phineas and Honky, would you believe that they're neighbors? Like, I could see them hanging out on their on their own time.
That definitely screams, though, like, indie match somewhere on some card where, like, you know, Phineas Godwin of the WWF and Honky Tonk Man, wrestling legend.
Formerly Phineas.
You know, they have, like, a 9-minute fucking boring match with all kind of rolling around.
The main event.
I can definitely see that happen. So a lot of lockups and weak punches. Him and The Rock go at it, which is kind of cool, I guess. Rock beats the shit out of him.
Kills him.
And then Honky's kind of the part of the crew that stands there and watches for Austin as he comes out, and he gets worked, you know, kind of caught up in the assault. His hair's a mess too. You don't usually see it so mussed up, but he's really exhausted. I mean, they let him go a while. So he goes 1955.
It's insane.
This is like Hammer in 94. It's just like 20 minutes of nothing. And he looks it. Like, he never goes this long. This may be his longest match of his career.
He probably is.
Maybe one of the Survivor Series may be longer, but like, as far as constantly working a match, this has to be up there.
How long is Owen Hart in this match? Like, 5 minutes?
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. So it's a lot of laying around.
Yep.
He eventually gets thrown out. It's a footnote. He just literally added nothing. He just stood and laid and got tossed. Steve, like, this was one of those times where I was cursing you for making me do this fucking podcast. Because I'm like, I literally just spent 20 minutes of my life watching the Honky Tonk Man lay on the mat.
Do nothing.
This match, just nothing.
When Steve Austin comes in and eliminates two guys immediately, I was fucking shocked that one of them wasn't Honky.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and then
zeros across the board.
Really?
It literally added nothing.
Look, Farouk and D'Lo Brown working together couldn't get him out of the ring. Like,
he
does also the half-ass Terry Funk spot where he bounces on the second rope. He throws in this match two of the weakest looking kicks I've ever seen. Like, ever. And I love, too, that, like, he gets eliminated because after 20 minutes of doing nothing, he attacks the freshest, biggest guy in the ring, Vader. And Vader tosses him. It's crazy. He doesn't fit in the world. Like, is this a rib, right?
I think this needed a guy, and he's just a body, and they probably said, stay out as long as you want. I mean, I don't know, like...
As long as you want. I'll go 20 minutes.
Yeah, they probably said, I don't know if it's even a rib. I think they probably said, oh, go have fun, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, it's way too long. There was no reason for him to be out there that long. We'll have to, I don't know, Chad can do some research or one of the guys who listens. I'm really curious if this is his longest match. Like, Survivor Series 88, doesn't he make it to the end? Or 87, one of those?
Yeah, he does. It's 87.
87 is the last one out. And that match is, that's 24 minutes. So it was less than this because he doesn't work that whole match, right? I mean, yeah. And then 88, that match is 17:50. So again, yeah, this has to be his longest that he's ever worked a match.
Yeah.
It has to be. There's no way he ever wrestled a singles match more than 20 minutes.
No, and even the Survivor Series, he's not in most of the match.
Yeah, this has to be his longest wrestling appearance.
All right, well, look, I gave him some pity points. I gave him one for work rate, I guess. And I gave him one for effectiveness because he lasted 20 minutes. But, you know, pity. That gives him two, which ties him with his 90. So he's obviously not going to be as good as the 90.
No.
I'd still like to keep him above Junkyard Dog, though.
I don't know, man. It's 20 minutes of nothing.
Yeah, but that Junkyard Dog run is like...
That's true. It's pretty pathetic.
Yeah, like it's Junkyard Dog's like still a legit star.
Yeah.
And he does jack shit. Like, I know it's shorter, but like
I don't care enough.
I think Honky's trying.
Yeah, I know he is.
So like, let's reward his effort by at least putting him ahead of the Dog.
All right, that's fine.
All right, so that lands him as the 81st best. And we got one more. We got one more Honky goodness.
Surprising one in 2001. Now, this was a true surprise entrance.
Yes.
Was not expecting him. He comes in at number 12. And it's a great one. Yeah. He gets a big pop as he comes out. And Kane is alone in the ring.
He's alone.
And he's in the early portion of his Jesus push of this match.
Yeah.
Where he has just been dominating everyone. And Honky comes out. He's singing his theme song. And Kane with the mask just stands there. And then grabs the guitar and just smashes him with it. And chucks him. And this was a great moment. It's a memorable moment in this match, which is also the kind of the hardcore rumble. So like that was ongoing during this.
Yeah.
And he did more here in 1/20th of the time of last year's of 98. So good stuff. I really like this one as a moment historically.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. His hair looks great in this one. It's back to looking good. And I love that he calls Kane big fella. Big fella, just stand out of the way. I got to sing my song. Like, who would call that man big fella?
He's so oblivious.
Yeah. And what would be the Rumble be without the greatest Intercontinental Champion? But like all of this, all his like hyperbole is great. Mm. And I also, when he starts to sing his song, he misses the cue off the top, which normally I'd come down on him for, but like, whatever. Like, it was fun. And when Kane blasts him, he is dead. Like, he sells it like pure death. So I think we're both a bit higher on this one. Yes.
Yeah, I gave him one for presentation. I mean, again, he's still not presented as much, but he's also not the afterthought he was the last couple.
No, I'm one in presentation, too. Like, he was a joke entrant, but a good joke entrant.
I went three for creativity. I thought this was a great spot. him singing and dancing, the big fella, takes the awesome, you know, shot at the guitar, really sells the shit out of it. I just thought it was a really fun performance from that standpoint.
I watched it right after I watched the 98 one. And I was just really thankful, too, that he was back in the jumpsuit.
Yes.
Like, oh, yep. It feels like the character's back, not like a cheap version of the character.
Yep.
I went two on creativity. Go on. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I didn't give anything for effectiveness. I mean, I guess. I kind of baked it into the creativity, I guess, in a way. So.
Sure. I gave him a one. You know. So that gives him a total of 8, which is better than his last one. That ties him with Hillbilly Jim from 1988.
Above that.
Okay, well, then he's the top of that.
Yeah, I think he's better than Hillbilly.
Sure, I'm fine with that.
If you asked anyone like that knows some level of history and said, you know, what do you remember more about, Honky Tonk Man in 01 or Hillbilly Jim in 88? You know what the answer is.
Yeah, I love how you said history and not wrestling history.
Yes, all of history.
Yeah.
If you're a historian in any way.
I know a bit about World War II. I know a bit about Vietnam. I know a lot about Honky Tonk Man coming out in 2001. So that lands him as the 59th best Royal Rumble performance of all time. And sadly, we're not going to talk about his total performance either. But here we go. Here's some stats for you. So far, he's the second worst in our list. And he has four Rumbles. He's in there for 29 minutes and 24 seconds. Zero eliminations in all of that time. And an average time in the ring of 7 minutes and 25 seconds.
That seems about right.
Yeah. Comes in, does nothing. You know who doesn't do nothing, though? Who doesn't do nothing? You and Chad. You guys are working very hard to get through the wrestling war zone.
Yeah, and we're in the fallout of Bash of the Beach 96 now. So we're in the great MGM tapings of Nitro. So that's a lot of fun. And also from Raw, we're in the fallout of International Incident. So we get the cool little Seattle tapings, which is, again, a little bit different than the normal locations. So we're heading toward a couple of big pay-per-views. We've got Hog Wild coming, which is a really good build. We talked about on our last episode an awesome showing by the Giant, who accepted the challenge of Hulk Hogan. So they'll fight at Hog Wild for the world title in Sturgis. And then we're headed towards SummerSlam 96 as well with the build toward Shawn Michaels and Vader, and more so Undertaker and Mankind. So we're in a really fun stretch right now on the Wrestling War Zone.
Nice. And that's hitting every other Thursday on North South. And ECW Three-Way Dance come back soon too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So as soon as Peacock starts putting the hardcore TV up, we'll be back. So a little bit of a summer break. But yes, as soon as those are up, we're planning on being right back at it. And we left off in a good spot. It was kind of a fitting way to take the hiatus because our last episode was Big Ass Extreme Bash, which had the farewell to Cactus Jack. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's been such a stalwart since we started the show really in early 94 that it felt kind of fitting if we take a little pause. It comes right at the end of his run and we'll kind of reboot, you know, after we get back to it. And he'll be on his way to Mankind, where Chad and I have been covering him in depth.
Yeah, and another gift to Mankind is viewer's choice. Marcus and Tim stay up late after every major show and break it down. And what do you think of their new format?
I liked it a lot. Yes. Yeah. I thought it was I think they've experimented a bunch, and I think they figured it out in this last one.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. Told me exactly why I shouldn't watch the pay-per-view. That's all I needed to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely all I needed to hear. So after every major show, viewer's choice kicks in. Like I said, they stay up late. You're going to get it the next morning most of the time. And, man, it's awesome to have them on the North-South Connection Podcast Network.
Very awesome.
Now entering the Royal Rumble.
Take this pink ribbon off my eyes. I'm exposed, and it's no big surprise.
Bad news, Brown.
This match is designed for him, Aaron.
That's what I heard. I've heard it many times.
He's a loner.
Was this guy like the ultimate don't fuck with this guy?
Yeah, he's up there, him and Haku.
Yeah, well, but I mean, Haku on screen, like,
yeah.
You know, like, I mean, he looked tough, but Bad News, like, I think I was
Andre, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I guess it's because Bad News, too, I was always like, he doesn't care about his physical appearance, so.
Right, yes.
He always had that gut, which is fine, but like, it's like, oh, no, this is a real person that will hurt me.
He's kind of got the toddler pride with the gut, too.
Yeah.
Really sticks it out there.
Yeah, refusing to change his gear. No, I'm just going to wear the Speedo.
Yep.
1989 comes in at lucky number 13.
Right, and he's got some heavy boos. Jesse talks up how he's this is a skill for him. It's designed for him, this match.
Yeah.
He goes right around the ring. He's kind of peppering whoever he can. He nails Ron Bass with some headbutts.
Right away on Ron Bass. Everybody attacks Ron Bass right away in this thing.
Yeah, he's just got a punchable face.
Were they mad because of the Spurs?
The basketball?
Yes, well, I'm always mad at the Spurs, but I meant the cutting of Brutus Beefcake.
I don't think they cared.
No.
Bad News doesn't care. He does choke away Shawn Michaels in the corner, though. He gets doubled up on a lot. He kind of fights through it with his hard strikes. Out comes Randy Savage, of course. They're in their feud. So he gets, just balls Bad News to some great reaction from the crowd. Bad News does some awesome selling, but Hammer makes a save. But all throughout the match, and this is a nice little touch of him, he always has his eyes on Savage. Like, he's always kind of looking for him, seeing where he can try and find him. They scrap a lot. They're fully married to each other this whole match. And in ways, it's kind of the blow off to their feud that never really got like a proper showcase. But this is like this is kind of their biggest showing that they have at a main stage. He does get tied up with Tito a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
In comes Hogan, and Bandit just tries to get the fuck out of Dodge. But Hogan catches up to him. They grind in the corner. And then Bandit is feeling himself a little bit. He almost shoves Hogan out. He almost eliminates him. He hangs on a Mega Power double team as well. He's bringing the fight to Savage. And then a great spot where Savage just barrels into Bad News. He comes back with a hard knee lift of his own after that, which is really cool looking. And then Bad News has Savage on the ropes, and Hogan comes over and, of course, kicks off the big angle of the match. We won't get into it here because we'll be hitting it big time soon. But Hogan does dump both Bad News and Savage out. So overall, this is a good showing. He had one mission to eliminate Savage, and he was constantly all over him. Brawling, strikes, anger, hate. And he was involved in a major part of the finish, too, obviously, with or at least the mid-show angle, as he was in the center of the Mega Power stuff that happens.
Well, and you can make the argument that he was responsible for Savage being eliminated. Like, I mean, I know Hogan did the final thing, but he was involved in it also. I love that Jesse says it's a typical Saturday night for him. Like, this is what it is.
And, this is what he does, yeah.
And something else Jesse said, he said that Savage is mad at him because Bad News saw Elizabeth for what she is.
Yeah. What a blowjob given whore.
Oh, he said that on Superstars on Saturday morning?
Yeah, well, that was always the storyline, right? It was that Bad News accused Liz of doing favors to Jack Tunney to protect Savage.
Oh, yes, okay. I love, too, that at one point he teams up with Arn Anderson to beat up Savage. I think that's an interesting team. And I cannot believe there was no miscommunication between the two of them. Like, everything goes off without a hitch.
Yeah, they work well together.
Were you at all surprised that during this entire thing, they're not talking at all about the WrestleMania 4 Battle Royal?
Right, that he has experience in that setting. Well, I guess that's covered. That's under the umbrella of this being made for him.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. His headbutts look amazing. I really like them. However, I find he's one of these guys, a lot like Dino Bravo, who struggles to do a flat back bump.
Mm.
It's either a slow flare flop or like he's doing a tumble with his legs in the air.
Yeah, he's. I mean, that's one thing with him is he's not really coordinated. Like, he's athletic, but he's not like, you know, his coordination's not great.
How much would this guy hate Hulk Hogan today?
I mean, he hated him then. So, I'm guessing that wouldn't change.
He probably would murder him now. Like, if it came out that this guy had murders, like, in the past, we wouldn't be surprised at all, right?
No.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah, so that makes sense. He lasts 16-24 in this, so, like, a good showing for Bad News.
And it was a good 16-24. Like, it wasn't like the honky 18, you know, whatever the fuck he went. Like, this was active. It was engaging. I thought he was presented well, so I went 4 out of 10 on his presentation because he definitely did feel like a threat to both Savage and Hogan when he's in there.
Yeah, I'm at a 3, but for same reasons. Like, he's presented as a legitimate heel challenger to the biggest baby faces in the history of the company.
And I went 3 on creativity. I thought he worked well, did some different stuff with the brawling. I loved him always keeping the eye on Savage. That was different. I thought he had a nice little match here.
I'm at a 2 on creativity, but again, it's not a bad thing. I just think that there's a bit too much of the same offense, but I enjoyed the offense. And I'm also at a 2 on effectiveness because I thought he held his own really well, but didn't really get a ton done.
I went 3. I liked his stuff with Savage. Again, I thought he was effective. And then he was, you know, he was kind of the catalyst in the Mega Power stuff during that whole stretch. So at least until the Towers came out. And but he's, you know, he's a big piece of that whole thing in there with, like, it makes more sense that he's tied up with Savage and costs him when Hogan comes over than like some other rando. So I think it kind of had to be him.
Yeah, it makes sense. So that gives him a total of 17 points, which ties him with Jake Roberts from 88. Smash from 1990 and Shawn Michaels from 89.
That's a tough one. He's probably better than Shawn 89.
Even with all the near eliminations and.
I don't know. I just like the Mega Powers gravity of that, but.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Shawn was good in 89. All right, put him last, whatever. I don't care.
I don't care either. You choose on this one.
Yeah, put him last. That's fine.
Okay. So that slides. So this is a pretty good showing, honestly, for Bad News Brown, because this slides him into the 32nd greatest Royal Rumble performance of all time.
No, that's solid. Yes. Out of, you know, whatever we've done, 80, whatever. So
87 so far.
Yeah. Well in the top half.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Good showing for Mr. Brown. I don't know if he'd appreciate being called that.
Well, it's his name, so.
I guess. Are you ever surprised that they never put the moniker Downtown Bad News Brown before?
Yeah.
It comes
no,
out.
I mean, I'm not surprised.
He comes out earlier in 1990.
Yes.
Number six.
He does.
And
surely.
Right away, beating the shit out of.
No,
old...
he's number nine.
He's number nine. Are you sure?
That's what's on your little sheet here.
Is it? Gotta get it right. We gotta get it right.
I think nine's right.
I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I inverted.
No, because six is that whole like it's like Piper.
Oh, yeah,
Savage.
Piper six. Okay, you're right. It's nine. Excuse me. Excuse me.
But you know, again, he's in this match made for him, and Jesse reminds us he's got no friends. Monsoon or
Tony
Schiavone.
Tony too.
He does go right at Bret Hart, which is cool with their history. So I thought that was neat. He goes at DiBiase in the corner. He's pulling at his hair. He ties up briefly with Dusty, but he slips away as Dusty throws out Savage. Again, kind of neat that he indirectly calls Savage, which is unintended, but kind of a nice callback. A lot of meandering. Not as heated as last year's romp for him. He kind of moves to guy to guy. His strikes always land hard and heavy, but it's kind of a series of stuff. And then he amps it up and charges Roddy Piper, who ducks and dumps him. But then Bad News hops up in the apron and pulls Piper out. They brawl to the back. So overall, not much of a showing, but the finish is super memorable. Like, everyone remembers this from this match. And it leads to their terrible match at WrestleMania.
The incident at WrestleMania. The...
Yes. Yeah. The no longer exists on Peacock. So, I mean, whatever. This was just, it kind of meandered. But the Piper thing, it's... I feel like this might actually be one of the biggest bang for the buck or like biggest swings of any entrant that we've had, like from a most such a least memorable performance to having like a very memorable finish that launches a big storyline.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Cause everything he does in this match is kind of like, it's just clubbing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just clubbing. And I love that you mentioned that he is involved with Savage, but like Dusty's clearly telling him to get out of the way.
So he can't right.
Savage. I love that.
No, and, I love this bitch beating from last year.
And I love too how he pulls Piper out by the hair.
Yes. It's so just dismissive.
It feels shittier, you know, like that he's got to pull him out by the hair. He's in there 6:24, and it does launch a hot feud, which in theory should have produced a good match.
Mm-hmm.
And again, and I don't know about you, but I'm still very upset that, like, he spends the whole match beating up Bret Hart, but they never once mentioned WrestleMania 4. I guess they just were trying to erase it from their memory.
Just don't care enough.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Don't dare. Maybe Vince was like, don't you dare mention WrestleMania 4 ever again.
Can't have that remembered.
I'll kill you. So that, I have him as a solid 2 as presentation here.
Yeah, yeah, I thought he was... Obviously not as high up the card as he was a year ago, but still presented as a player.
Yeah. And I got a 1 on creativity. It's just a lot of clubbing, but I think the ending's memorable, so he gets it for that.
Yep.
And a 2 on effectiveness because while he wasn't effective in the match, it set up the match at WrestleMania.
Yes. Yeah, and a big match at Mania.
Yeah. Yeah, a big atrocity at WrestleMania. That gives him 10 points, which ties him with Repo Man from 1992. Tito Santana from 1991 and Tito Santana from 1993.
I'd have him above Repo Man.
Okay, then he's ahead of all of them.
Oh, right. Repo's number 1. Yeah, I mean, I think he is because of the Piper moment.
Yeah, yeah. And the Tito Santana from 91 is 30 minutes. And you know how
we... Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, that was...
You know how we feel about that.
Long.
Yeah. So that lands him as the 52nd... greatest Royal Rumble performance of all time. Now, sadly, he's not even going to make our list because as of right now, our threshold to qualify for greatest overall performer, you have to be in 3 Rumbles. But Bad News is in 2. His average time is his total time, is 22:48. At least he eliminates 2 people, and his average time in the ring is 11 minutes.
Okay, not bad.
Do you feel now, looking back, that the match was made for him?
Yeah, I do think he adapted himself well.
Is he more suited to be in the Royal Rumble than on a team with someone in the Survivor Series?
Yes, 100%.
Definitely. You know what show is made for us? TNA Never Dies.
Made for you. Yeah.
Oh, it's made for you too. You too. You're the one who's in love with everybody on it. TNA Never Dies every second Tuesday on the North South Connection Podcast Network. Myself, you, and the lovely Jenny Smith of the Jenny Position is joining us. And we've watched TNA. My God, we've watched it. We're almost on episode 30 of this, right?
Yeah, we're into early 03 now.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's hellish in a lot of ways. But it's also a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's right. It's good and bad. I don't mind watching them as much as I did early on. Like, I feel like the storytelling now is a little bit more consistent, whether for good, for better or worse.
Yeah, they're
working. I feel like there's at least continuity. Whereas a lot of those earlier ones were just kind of like they were just throwing shit at the wall week to week. So it feels like there's actually something going on now.
Yeah, and like, you know, it reminds me of how little I know as I get fucking chastised by Chad Campbell for not knowing who Eddie Marlin is.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun to watch. It's a trip into insanity. And that runs in tandem with Jake Williams's The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast.
Yeah, he's working his way through the Ruthless Aggression era of 2002. He's into the kind of SmackDown 6 era. And the newest episode that dropped will have covered the infamous Billy and Chuck wedding. So sure, check that out.
Great performance. Great all-time performance by Eric Bischoff on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're plugging shit, join us for No Holds Barred. No Holds Barred is twice a month on Saturdays. We've been, since the beginning of the year, breaking down the greatest performer for every month. And every month so far, we've had a different winner, which has actually been really interesting and cool.
Yes. Yep.
I don't know
if that continues.
Yeah, we'll see. The next one coming up is June, so we'll see. Perhaps. And on the other, we got a new project in the works I think everybody's going to really like.
Yes, I agree with that.
I hope so anyway. You'll tell us, hopefully. Also on Saturdays from Squared Circle to Silver Screen, Cowboy and...
Crosland,
that's it. I wanted to say Logan, but yes. Cowboy, who is Crosland? Cowboy and Crosland, their last one was They Live, which is a classic movie starring Rowdy Roddy Piper. If you haven't seen They Live, doesn't matter. You'll still enjoy the show because Cowboy and Logan are awful funny in it.
Yeah, they are. They've done 5 movies now. They're rolling a bit.
Yep.
And jumping around different eras. But no, they did a great job and They Live.
Now, is Sean Kidd and Matt Souza, is that happening all the time now for Impact?
I think they're going to cover some shows where they can. So they've done a couple now. They just did the Impact, what the fuck the thing's called? Impact Live. No, what's the app called?
Oh, Impact Plus?
Impact Plus.
Yeah, you should
do. There was a special show recently on there, Under Siege, and they covered that. So.
Yeah, I listened to their first show. I haven't seen the last one yet, but I thought they were a lot of fun. And I like seeing Impact getting some love.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think that's a company that's made a lot of efforts to get better in the last year or so.
Yep.
And it is better. And it's every episode I've seen lately has been fun watch. So give Sean and Matt a try because they got great chemistry. And they did a really great job breaking down that first one. So they totally deserve your time.
Agreed.
Now entering the Royal Rumble.
Marty Jannetty.
Kind of anticlimactic for our last. Comes in 14, 1989. And guess who he fights right away?
Butch.
Ron Bass.
That's right, Ron Bass. and he gets kind of tied up with him, and it blocks him from helping Sean, who then comes over to save him, and they together eliminate that wretched Bass with a double dropkick.
They rid the ring of the most hated guy in the promotion, apparently.
And Marty's active. He works a bit with Sean as a team. He works solo, gets some nice punches on Bad News, working the gut, ends up with Perfect. And then Sean gets tossed, and Marty heats up the aggression after that.
Yep.
Goes right at Perfect. He's mauling him. Tully Blanchard shows up, and Marty catches a real hard elbow from him. He gets worked by Bad News a bit. Marty takes some fun double teams from the Brainbusters, but he keeps hanging on until they finally yank him out after a good two-on-one battle. And I thought it was a great sneaky elimination. You don't always notice. Where
it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Like hanging by his toes on the top rope. And then he finally just gets shoved out. So I thought it was a good upbeat showing from Marty. He was active. His selling was good. Some nice varied offense. He gets eliminations here and there. And I thought the ending was good, too. I thought it was a nice night for Marty in 89.
Yeah, it was fun. He gets brutalized by Bad News Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bad News, like, I don't know. Like, maybe he saw Hulk Hogan but realized he couldn't take advantage of Hulk Hogan, so he beat the shit out of Marty. I really enjoy that beatdown. I love that he crotches Arn Anderson, but then can't capitalize on when he's stuck there, even though, like, the announcers are making fun of Arn. There's also a great miscommunication spot that happens between Sean and Marty, where they're holding Bad News, and Bad News moves, and Sean smacks Marty in the face, I believe. And his pop is, like, the complete, like, girly pop of the 1980s. High-pitched screams.
You're in, all in, yep.
I enjoy, too, when he's pounding Kurt Hennig's head on all the turnbuckles.
Mm-hmm.
Starts at the top, goes down to the bottom. And I love that you mentioned that ending, because I think that ending is so cool. Marty's good in it, but Tully, man, like, he goes from, like, pushing his body to, like, reaching out, trying to pull him out by the head.
Yes.
Which I really like. And then Tully falls out of the ring. Yeah, really great. He was great until his partner came out. And then, like, he was great as long as his partner was there, which I feel is kind of, like, the story of his WWF career in a lot of ways.
Just relying on Sean.
Yeah, like, never really himself without him. But I do agree. It was a fun showing. I have him at a 2 as presentation.
I had him at a 3.
I have him at a 2 as work rate.
I had him at a 3.
I have him at a 2 as effectiveness.
I had him at a 3. I think we just have to agree that our calibrations are a bit off. Like, we're probably, you know, the same here. It's just my 3 is your 2.
Yes. Yeah. But
I think that's bearing out on a lot of these.
Yeah, and I think it's fair. But I do feel that, like, we're both really consistent with it.
Right.
Like, I'm consistently a bit lower, so it doesn't really end up affecting the scores.
No, and he was good here. I thought he was aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
The elimination was very creative that we talked about. They had the big elimination with the double drop kick. So I thought he was – I thought this was a nice night for him.
So that lands him with 15 points, mm-hmm. which ties him with Smash from 1989, the One Man Gang from 1988, and Mr. Perfect from 1990.
I'd probably put him at the it's hard to say put him above Perfect in 90 because that's the last two. But, man, that was such a disappointing Perfect one.
Yeah.
I think I'd put him above Perfect and below the others.
Okay, that's fair. Definitely below Smash, and I think probably definitely below Gang.
Yeah, Gang was good in 88.
Well, Gang's just a really, like, as much as I liked Marty in this one, he wasn't really an important part of the match.
Right.
Right. Whereas Gang in 1988 was I wouldn't say the guy or anything, but definitely an important cog. So that lands him as the 38th best Rumble performance of all time.
Okay.
Again, higher than you'd think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Tell us what happens to him in 1990, because he's in a bit earlier, right?
He comes in number 3 in Ted DiBiase's alone. Waiting for him as Coco gotten tossed out before him. Early draw. Fends off an attack. He unloads some drop kicks and some high octane strikes. The crowd is wired as they are for the whole match. Marty eats a hard boot and a charge. He's a little bit hasty. Does a big 360 self to clothesline, which always looks great. And then he gets a brief glimmer, but Ted ducks across body and Marty flies out with a really nice looking bump. I mean, he goes clean over the top rope and kind of spins on his way out.
Yeah.
And he hits the mat. So not much here. But it was hot. The crowd was into it. And it was kind of a tough, quick exit and has some nice shine. So, again, for what it was fine, but it just wasn't much.
Yeah, I always thought it was weird they played his music at number 3.
Well, they do it for Jake at 4, too. I think it's because DiBiase is alone in the ring. They play guys' music until.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love the clothesline cell. And that crossbody is really interesting. Like,
yes.
But yeah, you're right. Nothing going on. So I'm at a 1 on presentation. They didn't care, so. No.
Yep, same.
I'm at a 2 on work rate.
I give him a 3. I thought it was just a couple minutes, but, you know, he worked like crazy pace. And that bump was really wild that he takes over the top rope.
Look, it was 90 seconds of all action.
Yes, yep.
Sadly, that still gets me a 0 for effectiveness.
Yeah, no, same.
So that lands him at 7, which ties him with The Ultimate Warrior 1988. Oh, no, excuse me. Butch Reed, 1988, Jake Roberts, 1997, Sam Houston, 1988, and Ron Garvin. No, Sam Houston's the last one. Excuse me. I'm having trouble seeing. So Reed, Roberts, Houston.
Which Jake again? 88?
And no, 97. It's 97. Austin beats him up. See, that's actually a good comparable.
Yeah.
But I think Jake's more important in that match than Jannetty is.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Because it's Austin, they have a feud. But if you want to put him ahead of Sam Houston, I'd be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I thought Sam Houston, he just didn't do enough.
Right.
And plus, you know what it does? It puts distance between Sam Houston and Jake Roberts, which is something Jake Roberts clearly always wanted.
Yes, as his dad intended.
So, Theo, we're doing Jake a service. We're being honest with ourselves. This lands Marty Jannetty 1990 as the 70th best Royal Rumble performance.
Which still seems pretty good, given he's only in there for 90 seconds.
Yes, of course. That's very good. Then we don't see him for a few years. So what I loved about Marty Jannetty, like, because I did him late. I watched him late. Uh-huh. I fucked him late last night, and I'm not even related to him. I watched him, and, like, I was so tired, but it's like every other one is a bit longer, and then the other one's a bit shorter.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, 1994 is one of his longer ones.
Well, at least it wasn't as long as Greg Valentine, 94. But he does get a big pop from Providence crowd. Goes right at Sean in an awesome spot. The crowd is loving it as they throw down. Fucking Tenryu gets in the way. But Marty smacks Sean with a super kick and almost eliminates him. He keeps bringing it at Sean, his main focus. We get a cool mini battle with Marty and Brett. That's not something you see a lot, since the Rockers and Hearts days. Marty works him all around the ring to a mix where he can. Kind of goes after various guys. Not much mention of him, honestly, after the hot start with Sean.
No.
Good spot where he gets trapped on Bigelow's shoulders near the ropes and has to fight off Sean.
I love the punches. And then they go at it. The punches, yes, yeah, like firing him off, yeah.
Rifles him at him. And then him and Sean go at it again. And that's kind of the ongoing story of this. He almost pulls Sean out one more time before Sean reverses it and pulls him out for the elimination.
Yeah.
So I think he had a hot start. He kind of vanishes in the middle, but then the good was then too. The end was good too when he reengages with Sean before getting thrown out, and the crowd was into him. So this was fine, given even with the 9 minutes. I thought, you know, he presented well and got some different stuff in. So I thought this was fine.
It's just hard to cheer for him because he's presented as such an afterthought.
Yeah.
Right. Like first of all, what is he wearing?
And it's like shredded coconut.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is. He shouldn't be wearing a top, right? He doesn't need the top to go with the pants. There's just so many fucking tassels. He's not wearing wrist tape either, which drives me insane with that particular look. I love too that, like, there's this great spot where so Brett comes over and saves him, like, from Sean eliminating him, but then he doesn't bother to help Brett try to throw out Sean. He just walks away. Like, show a little bit of gratitude, please.
I'll do it myself.
Yeah, right? Like, and he uses a sleeper on Sean, of all things.
Man, mixed up the offense.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned Tenryu, too. Tenryu is – I can't wait to get to Tenryu. I don't want to watch it, but he gets right in the way of their, like, super kick party.
Yes.
And then they have to wait for him to move to do it. But he's just so myopic about Sean, he can't really focus on anything else. So – not a horrible run. 8 minutes isn't terrible. I had him as a one for presentation.
I went two only because he goes toe-to-toe with Sean. He almost eliminates him. And he was coming off like a pretty good 93 where he had been IC champ. And, you know, was one of his most consistent years as far as like a steady singles push through 93. So
I guess I didn't contextualize any of that. Like that run.
And he had just come off the tag title run too, like 2 weeks before this.
Yeah, that run to me is like it feels like it never happened. Like, I feel
like it's a good one. That's probably outside the Rockers. Like, that's his best stuff. Like, right. From his return on that Raw, where he beat Sean for the title until I think he leaves like right after this. Well, they had that weird little feud with him and Kid against Johnny Polo. But that was going on. Then he vanishes. But yeah, they had just won the tag titles. That was a good moment. So it's a good stretch for him.
He's good at the Survivor Series too.
Yes, yeah. I mean, within this year, he won the IC and tag title, so.
Right. Just needed the world title to get them all. I have him at two for work rate. Good showing.
Yeah, same.
And I got a 0 at effectiveness.
I don't know, I gave him a 2. Like, I thought the crowd was super into him. I thought the Sean stuff was a lot of fun, and that was effective in helping, you know, push Sean along through the match and also play at the Rocker stuff.
Right. Well, that gives him a 9. It ties him with Jim Brunzel, 88, Dino Bravo, 88, Butch, 91, Ron Bass, 88, and the Honky... I'm just having trouble seeing. It's getting my eyes... Ron Bass, 88. So Brunzel, 88, Bravo, 88, Butch, 91, Bass, 88. It's probably the top of this.
Yeah, I think he'd be my number one.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. As much as I love Jim Brunzel. But I'm fine with that. That's an interesting finish for him in 1994. 1994 is kind of a sneaky good rumble. It doesn't get talked about enough, I find.
Other than Greg Valentine.
That's right. Other than Greg Valentine. Also, 1994 was the latest edition of The Year That Was that dropped last week. So if you want to go down a trip down memory lane about Marty Jannetty and everybody else, that's the show that runs in tandem with this one on the North-South Connection Podcast Network.
Tis.
All right. We got one more. One more, and we are out of here.
This is it for tonight. 1996.
Yeah, which, again, a lot of these guys, it just feels so weird that they're still there.
Well, again, he had just come back in late 95. So he's kind of a little bit hot on his run here still. And this is like right before the new Rockers stuff. And he sticks around through all the 96. So this is kind of just the beginning of his run. Late draw.
Yeah, he's 28, and he's somehow dressed worse than he was the year before.
Well, now he's got like kind of the shorts with the top.
Yeah.
To the pants. He comes in right at Diesel. No pop, but this crowd is asleep for the whole fucking show anyway. Yeah. It's not just him. He kind of pelts around the ring, goes at whoever's near him. Similar to 94, we find Sean, we get the throwdown again.
Yeah.
He takes a nice hard sidewalk slam by Diesel, and then he kind of hangs around until he gets thrown out by the British Bulldog. So not much going on, kind of a waste. Besides the Sean throwdown, nothing really happened. I think they should have had him come out earlier in this match. I think they could have used him to go longer than they give him here.
Yeah, maybe. I love that he tries to headbutt Fatu.
Yes.
Which he really shouldn't have done. And in 94, I think he punches Fatu and hurts his hand. So he's clearly not learned the lesson of messing with a Samoan's head. And I love that he tries to he saves Sean from the Bulldog. Like, it's like he's trying to get the team back together, and Bulldog just powers him out like he's nothing.
And I think this is, again, kind of where we have like the curse of the late entrant. You kind of get hosed sometimes if you don't win or do something really memorable. So him coming to 28 kind of hurts him in a way, too.
Well, what's interesting is he comes in at 28, but his last one we just talked about, he came in at 29.
Yes, that's true. Yep.
It's a strange thing. Yeah, he lasts 2 minutes and 35 seconds, but the announcers don't give a fuck. I have him at 0 for presentation.
I gave him 1.
I guess I'm 0s across the board, actually.
I gave him a 1 there and a 1 on creativity, because I like the Sean stuff again.
Okay.
I thought that was good. But otherwise, nothing else doing. So 2 for me.
All right. Well, that drops him. That ties him with the Honky Tonk Man from 1990, Dino Bravo 91, Dino Bravo 90, Honky Tonk Man 1998, and the Junkyard Dog 1998. So easily ahead of Honky and Junkyard Dog.
Yes, easily. What was next?
Bravo 90, Bravo 91.
Yeah, I think I have him above. Well, I don't know.
And then Honky 90.
I think I'm above Bravo 90, but below Bravo 91.
We're breaking up the Bravos?
Yeah, well, Bravo 91, again, had the Hammer stuff.
Okay.
Which is at least like something.
There's an actual storyline happening in a
Dino
Bravo
there's
match.
Something there. Yeah.
All right, well, look, that's not the worst. It's not the worst. It's only 6 from the worst. He lands in at the 86th spot out of 92 Rumble performances we've talked about to this point. And sadly, he just misses the cut for our top 10. So Marty Jannetty, 4 Royal Rumbles, total time of 20:21, which is crazy. Like, you'd think he'd be in there longer. Eliminates one person and an average time of 5 minutes, 25 seconds.
All right. Solid showing.
Yeah. So, look, we wrapped up these 4 guys. We didn't have a main eventer, but it was still fun to go down memory lane with these guys.
Yeah, it's cool actually to touch on some of these forgotten ones that you may not think of versus the big stars.
Yeah, because – and you know what the thing is, too, is that we all we all know the big ones, right? Like, we all remember Hogan's appearances. We all remember Shawn Michaels. But, like, these ones, you know, it's... I find them actually a bit more exciting in a lot of ways to watch because I never really paid attention to Butch or Honky or anybody like that.
And speaking of stars, we do have a big one in our next episode that we'll be getting to. So
that's right. Now, should we count down our top 10 performances of all time?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Individual performances of all time. Number 10 from 1997, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Number 9, Shawn Michaels, 2008.
Number 8, Shawn Michaels from 1994.
Number 7, Shawn Michaels from 1995.
Number 6, Andre the Giant from 1989.
Number 5, Bret Hart from 1994.
Number 4, The Ultimate Warrior from 1990.
Number 3, Shawn Michaels, 1996.
Number 2, Shawn Michaels from 2007.
And number 1 is Shawn Michaels from 2010.
So if you don't like Shawn Michaels, this show...
Mm-hmm.
Must upset.
I don't know what kind of loser. Yeah.
I think he's the worst of all time, pal. All right, let's hit the top 10 performers in Rumble history.
Okay.
You want to nail us with number 10?
Jim Duggan.
No.
Oh, that's right. I'm in the wrong one. Okay,
that's all right. That's all right. Now for this top 10, guys, just so we're clear,
right?
You had to have 3 Rumbles. So go ahead. It is the number 10.
Chico Santana.
Number 9, Smash/Repo Man.
Number 8, Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Number 7, One Man Gang, or otherwise known as Akeem.
Number 6, Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Number 5, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Number 4, Jake the Snake Roberts.
Number 3, Mr. Perfect.
Number 2, Bret the Hitman Hart.
And number 1, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
With almost 4 hours of ring time.
Yeah, and the next closest is Bret with an hour and 38.
Something.
Yeah. All right, well, that brings to an end another Now Entering the Royal Rumble. Next time, who are we dealing with?
We're going to do, I don't like to say it because we change it often. So. Why don't we just leave it there? We got one big star and a couple others probably.
Yeah, and it's going to be a fun one. So join us next time. Thanks again. Thanks for all the support. It really makes it all worth it. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Keep on rumbling.